Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Looking for the perfect First Communion, Confirmation, or RCIA gift? Consider a beautiful, heirloom-quality, made-in-Italy rosary from Ghirelli. A Ghirelli rosary will be prayed with and cherished forever, guaranteed. Shop Ghirelli today. That's ghirelli.com.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
In this special audio cast, I interview a virtual superhero. Fireman Sam joins me, so sit back and...
One, two, three, listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a deep dish discussion with Fireman Sam Havlicek. He was working at Hopewell, New Jersey. I met him in church, and very interestingly enough, just in the past few months, in 2019, we are all very familiar now with the burning of the Notre Dame Cathedral's roof. Still, at this stage of my recording, no one exactly knows what happened. There's a lot of conspiratorial theories out there, but for the most part, they're saying it was an accident, because accidents happen. But that was one humongous accident. And then we realized that just a month beforehand, there was literally in Montreal, someone walked up to a priest while he was saying Mass and tried to stab him. And he did stab him. Thankfully, he wasn't hurt, but he was apprehended. And I remember it was a little old lady in a red sweater that jumped up to stand between this knife-wielding attacker and the Catholic priest who was stabbed. And then just in, gosh, in Easter, we've all heard of the terrible bombings in India. Excuse me, in Sri Lanka, I beg your pardon, with the terrorist attacks. And then just even a couple weeks ago, another attack happened in Burkina Faso. These things happen. So how can we put a stop to this? Well, in this deep dish discussion, while it is a fun conversation with Fireman Sam Havlicek, it really cuts to the core of what the church is supposed to do, and that's make sure that it becomes a place of safety for people. So who's keeping churches safe? Well, this deep discussion is going to make some pastors think. So make sure you send this to them and make sure that they have a plan in place for safety for all of the people of God in God's house. So enjoy this deep dish discussion on Shoot the Shiitake, brought to you by BrandFox, where fulfillment, customer service, and e-commerce come together. As a nonprofit ministry or small business, it's easy to lose focus on our mission and be caught up in the daunting task of commerce. And so BrandFox believes in partnering with you to complete your commerce solution so you can focus on your mission as they focus on the back end of your shop, where you provide merchandise to all of your followers. So learn more at BrandFoxLLC.com and enjoy this deep dish discussion with Fireman Sam Havlicek when we turn in just a moment. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. I've got with me a firefighter EMT. His name is Sam Havlicek, 23 years old, and he's working in what part of town are we, or what part of the world are we?
Hopewell, New Jersey.
Hopewell?
Yeah.
Hopewell, New Jersey, but then you also work in Princeton in a church in security. But let's go through the whole, like, I've never interviewed a firefighter before, so this is kind of cool. We're in a small town. How much work do you guys do out here? It looks like it'd be like a sleepy thing, but it's clearly not.
So, yeah, so we, you know, we answer about maybe 10 to 15 calls a week up here in Hopewell that range from fire to medical calls to just general assist to citizens. So it can be anything that we, you know, that anybody that needs help, we will come out and help them the best we can and try to get them resources that are needed.
Did you always want to be a firefighter? Like, I remember, like, when I was a kid, they would ask you what I want to be. And then, of course, you guys have the outfits and all that stuff. We're going to talk a lot more about it. But did you always want to be a firefighter?
So, yeah, growing up, I was always fascinated with, you know, police cars, fire trucks, ambulances, anything with lights and sirens going. That is what
I was. Were you interested in fire?
Not like fire, like setting fire or playing.
Well, I mean, were you like a normal boy?
Normal boy, yes. That is true.
So it was the bright lights that attracted you to it all.
Yep.
All right. And when you graduated from high school, is that what you went right into?
So when I graduated from high school, I started going to college for criminal justice. And while I was in school, I got a job part-time working in West Windsor as a firefighter, EMT. And that, you know, kind of expanded my career into the emergency services field.
How do you become an EMT?
So you go through a basic 3 to 6 month, depending on what state you're in, course to get the training of, you know, the basic medical field. Of
like CPR, how to stop
bleeding, you know, how to manage an airway. Basic, it's EMTs are very basic compared to like a paramedic, which is 2.5 years of medical school training.
Okay.
So we, you know, we operate a basic life support unit. That is an ambulance with two EMTs that can handle anything to keep you alive. Basic life support.
Basic life
support. Correct.
Okay, and so what does EMT stand for?
Emergency medical technician.
Emergency medical technician, but that's completely different from firefighting.
Correct.
What did you have to do to become a firefighter?
6 month fire academy that covers, again, from how to, you know, put out a fire to how to handle an alarm system going off, how to handle, you know, a car accident, hazmat kind of calls like carbon monoxide or fuel on the ground, all different kinds of, it's kind of the fire academy is the general, get the basic, well, what need to do. What
fire academy, like tell me what you had to do while you were there in fire academy. I mean, it's kind of like what you might think, you're doing push-ups and sit-ups, sliding down the pole and, you know, learning how to, it sounds so ridiculous, but I have no idea.
So, yeah, the basic fire academy teaches us all the basic skills. It starts off as a lecture, kind of. We go, you know, we go through, we do readings on, you know, the different topics. You know, we get talked about, you know, where the skills have come from, where the fire service has been, where it's going, kind of the educational background. And then towards the later half of the academy, you start getting outside and you start doing the actual skills, you know, cutting a roof with a saw or how to raise a ladder, how to, you know, bring a hose to a house.
What was the hardest thing for you to do?
Hardest thing for me to do, I would say, would have to be actually getting into a heated environment. So when it's, you know, they have a fire inside a building, they've, you know, made it smoky so we can't really see. The heat's keeping us down to our knees. That's why you see firefighters crawling on our knees a lot. And we had to bring a hose line in from the outside, you know, go in, go up 2 flights of stairs with the heat, get to the room that's on fire and put it out.
This is a real fire.
Real fire. Well, real fire that's, yes, active flames and everything, but it's a controlled environment by the fire instructor. So
okay,
it's a real environment that I just can't say, you know, time out, like we're done, but there's
yeah, control. So I mean, is this like a house that they have set up with like these gas lines?
No. Oh. No. So it's a building that's set up for us to play, but it's not like an actual home. Like it's not like a wood house that would easily catch fire and burn.
Yeah, so but it's a building that they've created.
Yep.
And how many people are in your class at this time?
It can range from anywhere from, you know, 20 to some big classes are 60, 70.
And you've always wanted to do this. I've got to ask you, what possesses a person to want to run into a building on fire?
The key to helping people.
So, that I mean, was, that sounds always, so nice. Is that true?
That is 100% true.
You want to just go in and help people.
And that's what, you know, brings the interesting story back to being at the church. Is that I, you know, growing up at the church, going to religious classes, you know, helping out with all the different volunteer hours that we had and stuff, that I got to see, you know, that I had that joy for helping people, whether it was at the food kitchen, making lunches, or if it was just, you know, fundraising to get different, you know, bags for people, all different necessities at home.
Were you a Boy Scout?
I was not.
Okay, so I'm going to get to the church thing. I still want to just stick with the firefighting because this kind of fascinates me, because I've got perceptions of firefighters, and okay. I'm just going to throw them your way, and I want you to offer a comment on it.
Okay.
One of the most popular are the ones that are seen very glorified, and you're on, you know, you're like either Mr. June or July on the calendar.
Okay.
Your thoughts on that?
So that is the, I guess, the image that for TV, television, you know, that they create of firefighters. There are, firefighting is a very, you have to be in shape. So a lot of us are in tip-top shape. But again, just like in everywhere, you know, you have guys that are not that, you know, muscular bodybuilder looking body that you want on the calendar. And you have guys, but they everybody has to be able to do the minimum work.
Sure. And what is the minimum? Tell me that.
Minimum being able to go into a burning building, crawl on your hands and knees.
For how long?
Depends. I mean, most of our we're trained to be in there for at least 25 to 30 minutes.
Okay.
And then come outside, get a break, and go back in. But again, depending on, you know, staffing wise for the day, depending on, you know, what other towns are doing, because we all work together, you could get to a fire and you could be in there, having to be in there for 45, 50 minutes, you know, coming out, quickly grabbing a new bottle and going back in.
Okay.
So it's a very endurance kind of...
The other impression that I have, okay, that's a positive one, but it's also kind of a little glorified and, you know, frankly, kind of arrogant. You know, you just see them in the newspapers, excuse me, in the TV shows, these dramas. And then, of course, you know, which one are you, Mr. July? It's just kind of ridiculous. But the other one is there is this crazy bravery that you have that a lot of people don't have. I was there at 9/11 in New York a few days later, and I walked over to some fire stations, and is that what they're called, by the way?
Yes.
Okay, fire stations in New York, and they were all out at the site, and they were working, and they looked rough. And what I think of is just this crazy bravery. I don't understand it. Like, tell me, where do you think that comes from?
So that comes from, I guess, the tradition of the firehouse, the fire company, that these fire departments were started to be able to help people when they needed. And most of them started off as volunteer, that people would be...
Volunteers, yep. Okay.
So volunteers, that people that, you know, they had their job or they did what they did, and if there was a fire, they came to the firehouse, took the fire apparatus, but, you know, depending what time in history, it could be horse-drawn carriage style,
sure.
Or it could have been an actual, you know, truck. But that they would come take care of it, and they would bring that to the fire and take, you know, help the people out. And as it got busier, that's when career fire departments started to form, and that's when, you know, this big cities got big departments.
Do you find a lot of faithfulness when is that you got to get that? Is this
no,
like it's, oh, it's just the
station,
front door?
Station phone, yeah.
Okay, I was ready to say that sounded like pretty intense. By the way, do you slide down the pole?
We don't have a pole here.
Why was there a pole?
So that departments do have them. It depends on how they build them. It was just, again, if the firefighters are sleeping in their bunk room or hanging out in their main, you know, main room,
okay.
They would be able to drop down the pole to get to the apparatus.
Okay, so it was just quicker than a stairway.
Correct.
Okay, that is kind of cool too. Now, the idea of this bravery, it almost sounds, by the way, folks, if you're hearing that, that is just their phone. It is not an emergency system. So don't freak out, because if it was an emergency, I would be freaking out. Just let's put it that way. But this bravery, do you find a lot of religious people, or do you just find a lot of testosterone-driven individuals?
I would say that it's 50-50.
About 50-50.
50-50. Some firehouses that I've been to that I've, you know, traveling and just, you know, going to different training sessions are very religious. You know, like they're praying before their meals, after the meals, on calls. You know, sometimes you see them making the sign of the cross.
Okay.
So they're like that. And other firehouses, you don't have any of it. Usually the big traditional city departments have, you know, they have a chaplain. You know, that's,
do you have a chaplain here?
We do not.
Okay. And as far as this kind of, if it's not religious, then it's just a real high level of testosterone that is kind of coming through. But we also know there are a lot of women firefighters these days too.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that?
That, you know, is the job is, it's again, if the skills can be done, anybody can do it. And that's where you get the volunteer companies that we see people that...
Do you live in close quarters though, and do you just feel a little uncomfortable, or do you have to live here, by the way, or
so,
spend the night here?
So, the shift, depending on what the hours are, some departments only operate during the day, some departments are on the 24, which means that you're 24 hours on, and then you have your time off. And then you come back whatever days they want you back, and you're there for 24.
Okay, now this phone has been ringing for a while. Is that a good sign or a bad sign?
So it depends on whose office it's trying to get to. You know, depending on if it's a general, you know, phone call from somebody, or
got it.
If it's, you know.
So because, but if that was a 911 call, what would happen?
It would be a different tone.
It would be a lot louder.
So yes, if someone's calling, you know, because they hit the fire button outside to tell us that there's an emergency.
So I mean, just to do the whole setup here, it is pretty early-ish in the morning at 9 o'clock. It's not super early, but we're in a small town. But you said that you've already been out and about. What time did your day start?
6 a.m. today.
6 a.m. today.
6 a.m. and the first call went out at about 7, and okay. The second call was out at about 8:10.
And so there's someone manning this area like 24/7.
Yes, whether it's okay. volunteers/career, there is in this area there is people that are assigned to be able to respond.
Okay, and I mean again, just with this phone call that's kind of coming through, and not just because I'm interviewing you right now, who would normally answer that?
It could be any of us.
It's just any of you.
Any of us. Yeah,
but
yeah.
You're the only one here.
No, so we have phones at the building, but depending on what the other guys are doing, it depends on what the
okay. They're hearing it or not. Because you also provide these other services that are very community oriented. You kind of, I mean, like there's a fire hall and people use it for,
yep.
I mean, this
all
is kind of typical.
Events. Yep. We do fire education. So teaching people fire safety, anything that can range on.
Okay. And so what's been your most valuable experience as a firefighter? And then what's also been like your most challenging thing?
So my most valuable would be to have helped someone that was in a life or death situation.
Life or death situation.
And that to me, that I think of.
How many of that has happened for you?
In my career, I would say the times that, again, life or death situation for someone that, you know, their life was depending on how we acted, probably a total of 8 times that I can think of off the top of my head.
Now, okay. You've been a firefighter for how long?
Going on 7.5 years.
7.5 years. So, gosh, I mean, that's plenty. And then what's been kind of the most challenging or the most frustrating? I mean, you plan to do this for the rest of your life. Is this your career?
So I do not plan to do this for the rest of my life. I plan on hopefully switching into law enforcement, which is, again, the same field, but a little different than putting out fires, maybe like investigating fires or, you know, being a police officer that goes and assists citizens.
Okay.
And on their kind of calls.
You sound like a Boy Scout, though. And you've never done any of that kind of stuff.
No.
So we're going to get to the question about where did you think you got this from? Because honestly, bravery is something you kind of can't teach. It's just something you kind of have to do and you have to become that. Where did you get it? Where do you think you got it from?
I would say that I got it from my upbringing of my mom and dad that taught us as my brothers and I that we need to be helping people and making sure that, you know, if someone needs something to go ahead and, you know, help them. And that I think turned into, I enjoyed just helping people with different scenarios, situations, the fascination with the lights, the sirens, the fire truck, what are they doing? You know, seeing a column of smoke, going and watch that and just that excitement and then seeing the joy that people have and, you know, from the help that they've gotten and so thankful and grateful for people helping them that I knew I had to do something involved in that field.
That's
there was
great.
No other question of going into finance or anything like that. Emergency services was where I had to end up.
Well, guess what? There's an emergency. Someone is trying to call. When we come back, more with Sam Havlicek, and we're going to get into how I met him at church because he's a security guard. Part-time at church? What's that about? Well, we're going to figure that out when we shoot the shiitake with me, Father Leo, back in just a moment. We hope you're enjoying this special episode of Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, and we're always looking for ways to partner and get support from all of our listeners. So if you're enjoying these conversations, please visit us at patreon.com/fatherleofeeds, and there you have access to all of our content, whether it be behind the scenes, cooking demonstrations, or even if you're a big supporter and want to really show that you're a partner with Grace, we'll even come to your home and cook you a phenomenal meal. So learn about all the different levels of sponsorship and please consider being one at patreon.com/fatherleofeeds. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake for a crazy morning with a Sam Havlicek, EMT and firefighter. I mean, just in between the break, first of all, you got rid of the ringing that was going on, and then you had just a ton of stuff happening here at the firehouse. Is this typical for you just to be like, as soon as you land, you hit the ground running?
Some mornings, yes. Some mornings you come in, and before we're even ready to go in service, we're out for something. Other days, it can be a nice, peaceful day that we don't, you know, don't lift a finger.
I guess it's just like church, you know. And speaking of church, you do something very unique at church. You actually act as a part-time kind of like security emergency management.
Correct.
Well, I mean, but why can't anyone else do it? I mean, like, over this past weekend, by the way, I'm giving a mission at his church, and I see this guy show up at the evening mass on Saturday, and then the early morning mass. I thought he must love my homily, but you were there, and you explained what you did.
Yeah, so I work at St. David's part-time as basically the emergency coordinator is kind of the position title, but even though it's nothing official, but that's kind of what it involves. Anything related to fire, EMS, and police for the church is my responsibility, working part-time for them.
Okay.
So if they have a question, you know, about passing.
You work the entire weekend.
Pretty much. The weekends I'm off or I'm not working anywhere else is where I'm there. And I try to be there for as many of the masses as possible.
Uh-huh.
And then also any of the special events, you know, they want me there in case anything happens. And again, that can be from a medical emergency, someone needs a Band-Aid, bloody nose.
So like a couple weeks ago, there was a priest that was stabbed in Montreal.
Yes.
And were you already working at the parish before that happened?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But it made you think, didn't it?
So I've been working at the church for the last 4 years, I would say, 5 years doing this maybe. The reason why is Father, the pastor there, wanted to be very proactive with everything that we've started to see. You know, you go back to 2017, you have down in Texas where you had the, I think I want to say...
Shooting.
The shooting, yeah, but yeah. I'm trying to think of how many people were...
So do you pack heat when you're in church?
So that I can't answer because of safety concerns for the
okay, no, that makes... Okay, good for you.
Of our plans and stuff like that. But again, we have very open to having, whether it's retired, current, and even on-duty officers come by the church. So at any point in time there, armed officers, undercover officers, you know, if they're off-duty. And
so let's get to some of the basic tips because it makes a lot of sense, and a lot of churches don't do that.
Correct.
But I also saw you during the collection, you walked back with where the collection went.
Correct.
And as a pastor, you have to pay attention with where the money's going.
Correct.
The fact is I've known ushers who've actually stolen from the collection.
Correct.
Is that what you were doing back there?
Correct. Very good eyes. Yes. So we, again, different churches for the collection have different things. You know, some have like the sticks on the basket that they hold and watch. Others, you know, they just pass the basket, but they keep an eye on it. Us, Father wants to have very open for people to give. That way they're not under pressure. So the baskets are started at the front of the pews and work their way back. And the ushers kind of stand at the end and wait for them to be collected.
Sure. That's typical.
So they're not, you know, they're not right there to watch people. So it's very easy for someone to possibly, you know, take something out of the baskets.
Or even ushers to take from it. And so you're watching them.
Correct.
So that's, first of all, one big security issue.
Yes.
Another security issue, I was over there this past weekend and the EMT was called, or the ambulance was called.
Yep.
Now, we don't have to go into that, but you just kind of jumped right into action.
So also being there, having the EMT for the church, you know, if I have a medical bag, that if someone has a medical emergency, whatever it is, that until the ambulance gets there, we can give them that care.
Any physical kind of violence that you had to prevent so far?
We have had people that have been very upset sometimes about topics that were said, especially if it's, you know, surrounding...
Sure, like abortion, gay marriage.
Correct.
People get very
upset, you know, especially with the homily and stuff. Sometimes people get upset with that, so they want to, you know, their emotion come out. You know, it's not that they want to harm the priests, some people... you know, even though we've seen, but, you know, they're not happy with it. So we've trained the ushers and the staff to be able to de-escalate that situation. So someone that comes in that's very upset, doesn't like what they're hearing, that gets up maybe and says, you know, that's inappropriate.
Yeah.
That they, you know, we can calm them down, we pull them out of the mess.
So what is the rule? I mean, because you can't actually really touch them because they can charge you with something. So what can you do? Like if they start to threaten violence or get loud and verbal, what can you do? Because this has happened in churches.
So again, depending on what position of somebody that's there, the staff is trained to, you know, use verbal de-escalation.
I met the staff. The majority of them are women, and not that they are unhealthy, but they are not as strong and fit as you.
Mm-hmm.
And do they come to every mass? I mean, and do the ushers? Most of the ushers can barely carry the collection basket without limping.
We have it yearly. We try to do it as a refresher. Anybody that's new goes through kind of a 2 to 3 hour training where we have retired police officers, sergeants, detectives.
You guys take this seriously.
Very seriously. That come in and sit and talk and go over, you know, the different things for the different people that are, you know, what their position is at the church, whether it's an usher watching the collection or, you know, at Mass in case anybody comes in that's out of place. Staff during the day, if anybody comes into the church, you know, asking for money, you know, we take their ID, you know, to check to see if the ID is kind of real or fake. Quick little tips that we go through to make sure that everything is in place to try to be the best service that we can give, but also keep it in a very safe, especially with the way the world's changing with things going on.
So what would be some of the suggestions that you would give to a parish? You know, because you're in a pretty affluent area, and it's not like you're in the middle of this crazy city. And so you don't have a lot of homeless people walking through, and that they're hardly even dangerous anyway. So what kind of tips would you give? So
the first tips that I would say is talk to your local police department, fire department, EMS department. All three, because again, police emergencies, right? Mm-hmm. Anybody that's, you know, aggressive attacker. Fire, again, if there's, for some reason, you know, something catches fire or the fire alarm goes off. And then medical, if anybody has a medical emergency, talk to them.
By the way, that also means turn the smoke detectors down if you have incense going on, okay? Anyway, yes. Keep going.
So, you know, talk to them because they're very outreach into the community that we want to be involved. We want to help people because it's easier for us to do steps to prevent stuff from happening than it is to respond and have to deal with it after. So, you know, we try to get the best control that we can get and be most prepared for it. So talk with them. The second thing I would say is there is training that's out there that the churches or the Homeland Security provides to the churches that they can go. And I know it's because Homeland Security all across, at least the United States, that they programs that are specific for places of worship that talks about, you know, the different violences that are going on, the things to look out for, to give you that starting point of what maybe do we need to consider. And then third is really talking to the parishioners, the staff, the ushers, who's ever involved at the church, to everybody keep an eye out for things.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a scenario because this actually happened in a church during a very crowded time about 10 years ago. They put the Blessed Sacrament, so the Eucharist, went back to the tabernacle, which was off to a little side chapel anyway, which was kind of odd. I hate that. It was a silly thing. But as soon as that was done, it was a woman. She was of a foreign descent, walked up to the tabernacle, opened it up, and kind of put her hand over it as if to kind of sprinkle something in the ciboria, in where the hosts were kept. What would you do? I mean, this literally happened. I didn't witness this, but it was told to me by the pastor and several other people, and they were just bringing it up in conversation. I would just love to hear your thoughts. What would you do?
So anything that looks to be tampering that could be, and I hate to say the word poison, but anything that could be harmful to people that could possibly put in the wine, the host, you know, whatever it be that people could ingest or breathe in the air. If someone walked in and took an envelope and let's say opened it and threw it and there was a powder, anything like that, we consider it to be a hazmat type of call. So at the church for something like that, the way that we would handle it is that everybody would be, we would call 911 and we would start the fire department and the hazmat department for our church that we have that was through the township.
Sure.
And they would come out and they have different devices to be able to test for what could that possibly be.
Well, even just to the basic. I mean, would you prevent her from even getting to the tabernacle in the first place?
Yes, we would try to stop again. So again, if she's gotten there, it's one thing. But if it's not, you know, if someone, again, especially if someone doesn't speak, you know.
How about this? Another scenario. Guy gets up from the pulpit, and because these are all real scenarios, and just starts screaming at the priest and cursing at him. He was 100% sane. He was just really angry at this priest, accused him of doing something nefarious, which was not true at all, but yet didn't stop him from believing fake news and just started screaming.
So for us at the church, again, the first thing that we have in place is anybody that does anything out of the ordinary. We've set it up with the police department that a call can be placed. Hey, we have an issue. Please come. And whatever the kind of call it is, they'll start whatever resource it be. So if we have someone like that, hey, we need an officer. We have someone that's, you know, acting different or screaming at, you know, whatever the scenario is. So when that's going on and the police officers being, you know, on their way, the next step is for the ushers and the staff to address the person. You know, sir, why don't you come with me? We'll have, you know, a private session with, you know, the priest over here, or, you know, come with us. We can talk. We can answer more of your questions in private. That way, you know. Sometimes people are doing it because they want to have a show in front of people.
Sure.
So at that point, if they refuse to leave, refuse to go, without trying to make them more aggressive, we will try to handle the situation there. Whether, and if, again, if they say, no, I'm staying here, and they walk out of the pew now to, let's say, the front of the altar and something like that.
So would you actually hold them down and Bring them out?
So
not take them out.
Depends on it depends on what, again, okay. If there's a weapon, that's, you know, it's a whole different.
Wait, do you have any training in weapon?
Some.
Okay, I can help you with that. Let me give you another scenario. Theft. That happens quite a bit. What would be your suggestions to help with theft from collections? I mean, people don't realize it, but you could collect up to 10 to 15. I know church has $20,000 on a weekend. And first of all, they've got to make sure that, you know, the Brink security armored truck comes. But what about just like the petty theft, grabbing like $100 bills at a time? Wait, that'd be wonderful if people dropped $100 bills, but you know what I mean.
Yes. So for us at the church, again, if we see someone that takes their hand into the collection and pulls it out, the first thing to do is we kind of, okay.
But how about if it's ushers?
Ushers.
Yeah.
So good question with that. The ushers, again, our church is very fortunate that we have the money that the whole place is camered. Yep. So anywhere people go.
So cameras.
Uh-huh. There's cameras.
Yep.
And a lot of that is visible stuff that you can see, you know, very obvious cameras.
Sure,
and some
sure.
are very small, hidden in certain places, you know, where the money is kept and mm-hmm. everything like that. So it would be on camera first for us to yep. see someone that takes the money, and, you know, it would be for that. So okay. that's how we would have, again, we say, you know, the evidence to prove something, because it's hard to say, oh, you stole out of the collection.
Sure.
How do you know if it's
well, but
like
you're actually there to kind of monitor to make sure it goes in the safe. Once it's in the safe, it's a lot harder
correct.
To get out of. But you know what? If people are basically doing the same masses over and over again, they can develop a little Ponzi scheme system, you know, and be like, hey, one week you're going to do it the other week. So I recommend there always be a staff member at different masses. Always there just reviewing it, because
correct.
If you can't be there, there's got to be a staff member
correct.
That can walk in
and we
box.
Have everything partnered, so
yep.
two ushers take the collection back
uh-huh.
with two or three staff members
uh-huh.
so it makes it very hard for someone to be alone
great.
Especially
no,
with the money.
That's fantastic.
And that's where people, again, alone or
what do you think? I mean, you're a Catholic young man. First of all, you go to all these masses. Do you just get sick of it? Do you like get sick of church stuff?
No, I honestly I love listening.
What
to
is your problem? You're not
very
normal.
Unique. Very unique.
You are unique. And I think we need more of that. How, I'm going to ask you two questions. How do we foster this desire to serve, to be courageous, to do the brave thing? How do you foster that?
Good question. I would say that it comes to the drive, especially of the younger generations, to, you know, that bringing them to the church to show them that it's truly the helping in any kind of way that you can do. So for me, it was getting involved in the emergency service field to help people.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I've had been in the back of the ambulance where I've had to say a prayer with somebody, you know, because they, you know, they turn to their religion and stuff. And, you know, that bond that they, you know, the light of their face when they're freaking out and don't know a prayer, and we're holding hands
sure.
and we're saying a prayer, you know. Something like that to really, you know, whatever.
So you're talking about just giving them experiences of service and selflessness.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
That, oh, no, that's great.
And, you know, again, for me, I started off at a young age, you know, helping with the soup kitchen to be able to, you know, and an enjoyment to be there. You know, at St. David's, they have a very good youth group, Bold, they call it, that is very drawing to bring kids in. And it's very enjoyable to go. I know for me, I enjoyed going to CCD class because
it was you different. Are a sick individual.
But
you
it was
know
different. That. It was unique because I talked to all my friends as I've traveled, you know, grown up,
sure,
and you know, went to college and stuff. That, you know, theirs was very harsh, educational. There wasn't mine. I remember playing fun games to learn about, you know, religion.
Okay, and, so I mean, it's all about experiences. Last question for you as we conclude this Shoot the Shiitake. How can I be a good priest for you? Well, not you be a good priest, but like, how can I? I mean, I'm just a priest. I'm just your mission preacher for the weekend and the past week. By the way, did you guys have a good time with this mission so far?
Oh, loving it. I'm loving it.
Well, but you're a weirdo. Do you think even just other people who...
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
oh,
so
yeah.
even the non-regulars
yes,
would come.
Yes, because
okay.
I mean, again, being at all the events, I see the numbers. And
yeah.
especially the multi-night things. I
yeah.
can see where the numbers kind of stagger and then drop
uh-huh.
off or
yeah.
they stay the same.
They've been great.
You know, the fact that I think by like 1:30, 1 o'clock, the day that it was announced... For Tuesday, it
yeah,
was sold out.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
I mean, we were all shocked. People were complaining about it.
Yeah.
You know,
know.
Oh,
it's kind of embarrassing. It happens.
But that's, you know,
but I appreciate
draw,
that.
You
no,
know,
but
so.
But for you, like, you're a firefighter, you're EMT, you're also just a regular church member, but incredibly involved. How can I be a good priest for you?
I would say sharing people's experiences and the story, you know, the stories that you bring to, you know, talk about it, even in your, you know, your talks, that you've talked about other people you've met and heard their stories and shared it. You know, that connection, to know that it's just not here, that it's around the world. I mean, international. That, to me, it makes me feel that anywhere I could go, I could find people like me or people that are involved in the religion. And to me, bringing that and connecting that to me is what, you know.
Well, that's why you're on this show, because you are a unique individual with an amazing story. Sam Havlicek, all the best to you. Be safe out there. And thank you for joining me on Shoot the Shiitake. And when I come back, I'm going to give you my carryout order. I'm going to share with you what I learned from Sam and what I think of this young man. And more importantly, what we can learn from him. We'll be back with my carryout order here on Shoot the Shiitake. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, for the carryout order after talking with Fireman Sam Havlicek. What a stellar individual. You know, I just, again, background story. I met him at church because I had seen him. He was kind of standing and lurking in the background at the evening vigil mass. And then I saw him again at the early morning mass the following day. And then I saw him a couple more times. And, you know, it's just easy to see somebody, especially if they're not sitting in a pew, but they're always standing in the back. That's where all the good Catholics sit, by the way. We know that. So guess what? If you're with those who sit in the back, we can still see you, all right? So don't think you can hide. But in Sam's case, it's clear that he needs to be visible, but he was also unarmed. He was also not dressed, not unarmed, because I don't know, I can't talk about that, but he was also not dressed as anyone in official with the capacity to provide service. He was just paying attention, and it was clear that he was. Also interesting, when I came to this particular church, there was a police car prominently sitting kind of off the side of this church, and I come to learn that that's just what the local police have decided to do, is to provide, you know, support that way. It is a wealthy community that I was invited to go to speak. And by the way, I don't speak to just rich people. I go to many places where they can't even afford my services. And so I try to do what I can from a financial perspective to provide the same message and quality of service that the Plate and Grace movement does, no matter what your background is. But this particular place just happened to have had a lot of money, and you can tell. And I just know that places like that are kind of like big targets. That's why wealthy companies have security guards posted at the front and around the back, and they have cameras to make sure that people can see. And I'll just say that church security, especially in this day and age, needs to be one of the priorities of a pastoral council, to work with the priest. Notice I didn't say the priest has to do this, but a pastoral council really needs to develop a plan and create some sort of structure and a process for every type of emergency. Every type of emergency. In this day and age, we're seeing churches that are experiencing arsons. We are seeing churches experiencing, you know, people who have perhaps some mental or psychological challenges, and they can come in and disrupt. So basic disruption. You know, in this case, I saw a fireman, Sam, literally jump into the action because I think it was a senior gentleman fell and lost his footing. And so he kind of hurt himself. And so not only does he have to take care of her, but also take care of loved ones who may be concerned. You know, I mean, if there was just somebody who at least says, I'm a doctor, I can help, that brings tremendous calm to the rest of the people. I travel the country and the globe, you know this. And so when I was at another church in the South, I believe it may have been in Texas, like right at the point of the Our Father, I hear this gasp. And, you know, off to the left corner of my eye, I see a bunch of people gathering because a senior woman literally just passed out on the floor. I mean, that could have been a heart attack. Gratefully, thank you, Jesus, it wasn't anything serious. It might have been just the fact that she hadn't anything to eat. And it wasn't like I was preaching that long or anything, you know. Maybe she was just so enthusiastic that her heart started to race. But she had just passed out. Thankfully, she was okay. I even walked up there and offered her a blessing in between during the sign of peace, you know, even telling the deacon to stay attendant to the Eucharist, just in case, right? So, I mean, I was raised by a doctor, and I was also raised by a very concerned mother. and overprotective mom, and also, you know, brothers and sisters who looked after, you know, my mom and dad's favorite child, me. So you could laugh at that. That was supposed to be funny. But in other words, I grew up protected, not privileged, so relax, but definitely protected. And so I pay attention to the ways to protect people. You know, and we have what is called in the Catholic Church child protection policies. But do we have really structures in place to protect people when they are vulnerable? And I will admit, in the Catholic Church, we are, in a way, sitting targets. I always tell people that when we make the sign of the cross on us, we literally turn ourselves into crosshairs slash targets slash God's got his eye on us, but guess what? So do other people. And I just know all too well what securities can do. It can help prevent theft of, you know, the offertory. I mean, not like this is in your church, but in some churches, some of the ushers are just, they're pretty old. No one is going to, you know, they're not going to be able to do anything if some big thug walks up and be like, hey, man, give me your money or I'm going to beat the living heaven out of you. You know, they're going to hand it over. And that's going to be like from a couple hundred to perhaps even thousands of dollars that do not belong to criminals, but belong in the safe. You know, but between the offertory and the safe, there has to be a process so that, first of all, ushers won't be tempted. And look, I'm not trying to cast blame or create presumption or suspicion, but I have been in communities or have known communities where ushers have stolen. Look, I even know of priests who have unfortunately gone to the way of evil and literally stole from the collection themselves. What's the process to make sure that a priest isn't going to be unjustly accused or to avoid the temptation? I'm grateful that's not my issue. I don't give a rip about money. I need it in order to survive and help to support our organization. But the offertory is a big thing. And there was a church where I was at where literally some woman comes up to the tabernacle and she was mentally disturbed, but she opened it up after we had put it in place, the remaining Eucharist, and she basically put her hand over it like she was sprinkling something. What do? You heard me say it. I mean, you cannot in good conscience give that communion out to anyone else. And so we had to properly dilute it and dispose of it in the sacrarium, very slow process. And this was a church with a lot of extra hosts in preparation for other churches, other masses throughout the week and hospital communions and stuff. So there's just a ton of ways that I think parishes need to kind of create structures. After all, you call your priest pastor. He is the shepherd who's supposed to protect his flock. And believe me, there are rapacious wolves out there who want nothing more than to destroy us. If anything, even just by creating confusion with disruption or even with criminal activity, we need superheroes. And so if you are or know people who are involved in safety, civil service, fire, you know, police, please make yourself available to your parishes, to your pastors, and talk to them and create a schedule whereby at least at every Mass, someone is walking with the money, taking care of any needs that might arise, and making themselves visible so that should there be any activity that requires someone to step in, our church will know that there are superheroes. I want to say a final thought here about just praying, because prayer can protect us to some degree from the spiritual evils. But spiritual evils can become incarnate, and that means take over humanity. And just as goodness can become incarnate in the person of Jesus Christ, so can evil in possession. And that's why I think that if there are any people who are going to volunteer, you know, in this case, he got a job, and that's great that a parish was thinking that this is such an important mission that they need to be paid. But in that case, if you are going to be one of these people like a Sam Havlicek, I'm just glad to know that Sam not only went to church as someone who was trying to keep it safe, but also as someone who was trying to grow in holiness. He was just trying to be a good Catholic man. And so while he can do what he can to protect people, perhaps physically or perhaps even from any sickness or, you know, just to provide service in the immediate emergency, he also was trying to protect himself with holiness. So I want to thank Sam Havlicek for the time that he spent with me. I'm sorry for the annoying beep and the ring at the beginning of the first part of our deep dish discussion, but that's just what they have to live with, you know, there in the firehouse. And so to all of those people in civil service, you know, we have the blue mask to say thank you to you. If you don't have that in your church or in your diocese, talk to your priest and say, hey, we want to be of service to you, church. Will you also be of service to us? And pray for us, bless us, and make sure that we know that their job isn't just to protect people from physical harm, but also spiritual as well. So we hope you enjoyed this deep dish discussion and my carry out order for this special Shoot the Shiitake show. And this was brought to you by Brand Fox, where fulfillment, customer service, and e-commerce come together. You know, as a small quote unquote business owner who has to kind of send out my merchandise, they're the ones who take care of my shop, where you can get all of my books and they'll be able to count how many is left, how many went out, and they take care of the financial aspect of it all as well, because again, that's not my job. My job is to provide the mission. And so we want to encourage you to be part of this mission. And you can do that even just by being a sponsor on patreon.com/FatherLeoFeeds. And if you want more information about Brand Fox, go to brandfoxllc.com. And if you want to use their services by getting some of my merchandise, whether it be the apron or my new books, you can learn more by going to shop.FatherLeoFeeds.com. So once again, thank you for listening. And between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at KaneFord.com.